Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome, everyone, to the Learnest Show, broadcasting live to you today from the Phoenix Business Radio X studios here in Tempe, Arizona. I'm your host, Deborah Hildebrand.
And I'm your co-host and producer, Lauren Jenny, and we are here to celebrate Women in Agile.
So one of my passions is to help young women who want to have a career in STEM. This show is a big part of how we get there, because as we highlight women who are doing amazing things in Agile, we create role models for young women to look up to and emulate. So I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Learn Agile. We provide Agile certification courses, professional learning courses through Scaled Agile and IC Agile, as well as enterprise Agile coaches to help you through your Agile transformation. You can find out more at learnagile.com. That's LURNagile.com. So I am super excited today to welcome Sally Alotta, CEO and founder of Agility Health. She's well known for her work as a dynamic and engaging speaker who advises top executives of leading global organizations through her enterprise business agility transformations. I can't think of a more powerful and successful woman in Agile for girls to emulate. So I really thank you, Sally, for joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for the kind words. I'm honored and thrilled to be here.
Sally, it's a pleasure to have you here. So why don't you tell us about yourself and your company, Agility Health?
Sure. I started my company 11 years ago. And I always like to tell the story because, first of all, it was called Agile Transformation, not Agility Health. And I'll explain why we changed it. But I was 6 months pregnant. My little one was about 4 years old. And it was in the middle of the Great Recession, the other recession. So it was in the middle of the economy falling apart. And everybody's like, how did you have the guts to start a business at that time? And I always tell them, I really believed in Agile. Like, I actually believed that even though people were being laid off, it was the great, you know, recession, it was 2009, Agile would give companies a way out. They would be able to do more with less. They would make teams more productive. And that even if they had to cut costs everywhere, they would still invest in Agile. So that's when I started Agile Transformation. And it's 11 years strong. And we've gone through our own transformation and growing up as an organization. We started as a consulting company, providing a lot of training and coaching and consulting. And then I decided with my strong technology background, so I'm a software engineer by trade, that I wanted it to be more of a platform and an enablement company, partnering with consulting companies ourselves.
Wow, this is going to be a very intriguing conversation. So we have lots to discuss. Deborah, shall we get started?
Sure. So this is always my first question, and hopefully we can get rid of this question soon. But there's COVID going on and a lot of work that's being done virtual. So how has that impacted your work, Sally?
Yeah. Wow. It's really impacted me. Our company's always been virtual. We do have an office here in Omaha, Nebraska. But most of us are very comfortable working virtually. So I would say for half of the company that was already virtual, they're like, nothing's happened. For the other half that used to come to the office, they're like, this is kind of cool. Like, we can actually work from home. So we did a survey, and I asked people, do you want to come back to the office? When do you want to come back to the office? And there was a pretty general consensus that no, we're good. We actually like this. Our productivity has not decreased. It's probably increased. For me personally, it's been the gift that I never realized I needed, because I always traveled every week, every other week. I was on the road, and I did not realize physically, mentally, emotionally, how much that was impacting me, feeling I'm behind as a mother. I'm not a great wife anymore. I'm not doing anything at home. I'm always relying on people to help me. So I had so much guilt. And now that I'm home, and with my children and able to still do this. And I've spoken at so many international conferences this year from here, India, Brazil, you know, Latin America, but right here. So it's been a blessing in disguise. Not to say that COVID's a blessing. I'm saying working from home has been a blessing for me.
Right. I've been virtual pretty much my whole career too. So it didn't really impact me that much. But for me, I really like that people now understand how they can do it, right? Like they can actually do it. and I don't have to explain to them or try to convince them that it's, you know, it's okay to work virtually. So I agree. It's been a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Yeah, and many of our customers that before, even the government that would normally refuse to work virtually or believe that an executive session and seminar could never be done virtually, it'd have to be in person, they learned that actually it can be done virtually. And we've all grown up. We're starting to use better tools like Miro and all of that to create that virtual post-it note wall, you know, flip chart. I think we've all had to get a lot better at virtual facilitation as well.
Yeah, it's been challenging. But I think at least my instructors, they're loving it. So I think it's great. I hope we continue. I hope that, you know, we can continue to do it virtually because, you know, obviously it saves us costs, but it also allows for that mental, you know, like you said, they don't have to travel every single week and be away from their families. So I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a direction in the positive spectrum. So I agree with everything that you've been saying, but Sally, you believe strongly in measuring what matters and that growth without or measurement without growth is effort without impact. Can you talk a little bit more about how this inspired your work with Agility Health?
Sure. You know, I've been watching companies adopt agile methods, agile frameworks, agile practices, you know, the general big fights on this methodology versus that and everything. And, you know, you get to a point where you've been in the business for a while and you realize this is all about continuous improvement. It's about us pausing for a second and us agreeing, what does good look like for us? What does, you know, we're crawling, what does walk, run, and fly look like? Where do we want to go? And do we all agree on what does good look like? And then investing in measuring and improving, not measuring just to get a survey and to get data, which is the traditional way of doing it. I send out a survey, I grab data, I'm like, hey, awesome, we're here. But using measurement as a way of accelerating the maturity and accelerating their growth and us pausing to take that time. People are in such a do, go, 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 that pausing to reflect, and we have this as part of Agile, retrospectives and inspect and adapt. But what we don't have in Agile that we are trying to force feed into the market, honestly, right now, is strategic retrospective, strategic measure and grow, where we pause, not just every 2 weeks, but at the end of every release or at the end of every quarter, and we make time beyond an hour for it. An hour is not enough. An hour is what we call a tactical retrospective. We're just talking about the last 2 weeks, the next 2 weeks, and sure, we can do post-it notes and whatever, but pausing to say, guys, where's the biggest bang for the buck? And what are we going to commit to as a team? But what do we need our leaders to commit to help us grow? So these measure and grow workshops that we talk about, and I'm very passionate about, is because it gives teams the time to pause, reflect, identify big gaps or big elephants in the room or low-hanging fruit even, and commit to improvement in action. And it also allows the team to raise their voice and say, hey, managers and leaders, here's your backlog. Here's the one or two things that we need you to do for us. To me, servant leadership that we've talked about for many years in the Agile world, we've always said managers adopt servant leadership, empower the teams, yada, yada, yada. In action, what does that really mean? It means that the management team, the coaches, are listening to the voice of those teams and removing their obstacles and impediments and doing that in a systematic way. That's why I'm passionate about this, because it's not about the metrics for me. It's those conversations. And it's the continuous measure and improvement and being real about action and not surveys with just I'm collecting data and rolling it up and making a decision based on that. That's worthless for me.
Right. You definitely make an impact in society that way. And it's much more than just the job. It's more about the people, right? Yes. So with that being said, you also are an activist, founder of the nonprofit in Sudan Next Gen. What impacts does this have on the world, you know, for the people and whatnot?
Sure. You know, I spoke about this in the last Business Agility Institute conference. Evan Labor was like, you have to tell the Sudan Next Gen story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but it's not Agile or Enterprise Business Agility. He's like, that's why you need to tell it. And it was very vulnerable for me to share this because to be honest with you, all of us are so busy with our day-to-day lives. Like who has time to be an activist? But I saw the revolution happening in Sudan. I saw millions of young people coming out to the street and they're doing it in Africa all over and saying no to dictatorship. And I really think we all need to pay attention to what dictatorship means, because we can't take democracy for granted. I mean, I saw the kids and the young people die, and the courage that they had to come out there to say, no more dictators. We need democracy. We want to be free. We need freedom. Seeing all of that and my dad's history, kind of being part of the Democratic Sudanese government before this new government took over, just, it was a calling. I felt like I had to do something. And honestly, it started with a flip chart and a video. So I put up a flip chart. I came up with a vision of Sudan Next Gen and how can the diaspora, all of the Sudanese outside of Sudan, help. I put some post-it notes. A gentleman who's very popular out there with his videos came and recorded me. We posted it out there on Facebook and it had like thousands and hundreds of thousands of views. And then it just became this idea that sparked a movement. And then now everybody in Sudan knows about Sudan Next Gen. I met the prime minister. We've collected $200,000 recently for the flooding. We've done a lot. We've mobilized a lot. But I honestly, I can't tell you what we're doing next year. Like, I pretty much plan the next 3 months. That's pretty much it. We are inspecting and adapting, figuring it out as we go, because this is not what I learned in school. But I will tell you, all of my change agent skills, all of my transformation skills is applicable. Like we say, discover, learn, inspect, adapt, get feedback from the public. That's what's happening there. So I'm inspired by it, super scared all the time too, because I'm like, do I know what I'm doing? Right? You sometimes get into a field, right? All of us here listening, whether it's you getting into STEM or becoming an agile coach or learning about technology, mm-hmm. or maybe you're an agile coach that's worked with technology teams and now have to work with business leaders and executives. You kind of doubt yourself. You're like, do I really have the skills? Are they going to find out that I'm a fraud? But you push through, you learn and you grow. And that's what's happened to me with Sudan Next Gen.
Right.
That's amazing. And I feel that way every single day, no matter how much experience I have. And I remember when I was first in consulting and even like 10 years in, I still felt like I had no idea what I was doing. And I love it. They would just keep pushing forward and doing it anyway. Right. So yeah, just keep going. I love it. That is just amazing. And I'm excited to learn more about Next Gen, because I didn't know about it until we had booked you for the show. So I'm excited to learn more about that. So Sally, the term business agility is not as mainstream as I think it'll be in a few years. It's probably going to be more mainstream than we know. So for our audience, can you define business agility?
Sure, happy to. So the definition of business agility is the ability to adapt to change, learn and pivot, deliver at speed, and thrive in a competitive market. Because gone are the days where large companies can eat small. Today, fast companies can eat slow. And your ability to outlearn your competition is your only sustainable competitive advantage. So that definition, especially that first part, is coined by myself and Evan Laybourne. But where did it come from? We asked a lot of people getting certified in our enterprise business agility model, like, what does business agility mean to you? And so listening to a lot of people say, well, it's about speed, it's about flexibility, it's about learning, it's about responding. We really just honestly don't want to take personal credit, because it was all of that combined that said, okay, well, they're all starting to say the same thing, which is the ability to respond to change, learn and pivot, deliver at speed, and thrive in a competitive market. And I think it's the future of agile. I think that business agility is what all organizations and leaders and executives are striving for, right? That's the end result. We use Agile and Scrum and Kanban and SAFe and all of the methods and the tools as a way of enabling that. And we, as an Agile community, until we start realizing that and falling in love with the outcomes, the business outcomes that we're delivering and the real business agility that we're enabling, and fall less in love with the methodologies that we're adopting, we're not going to start speaking to the business. To executives, we're going to get, oh, those are the process people. Oh, those are the technology people, because we're using our own language as opposed to using the language of the business and the executives, if that makes sense.
Right. It totally does make sense. And I agree. It's a different term for what business has been striving to do forever. Right. So, you know, one of the things that I'm going to be working towards in 2021 is operating with agility, right? Not just software, not just technology, but how do we operate with agility? So it's amazing. I love it.
for customers, for companies that say, I still don't know what that is, I actually tell them COVID just gave you a boot camp. Whether you signed up for business agility or you did not sign up for it, did you just have to respond to change? Yes, check. Did you have to learn and pivot quickly? Yet, check. Did you have to deliver at speed during COVID? Check. And did you have to learn how to thrive in a very competitive market? Every industry we're looking at is being disrupted. Supply chain, medical, online, e-commerce. I mean, think about this, you guys. Warner Brothers just said that they're not going to be releasing movies just in the movie theater anymore. It's going to be streaming online. So you have a whole industry that is about to get disrupted, which is physically going to a movie theater might be very different. Every business is being disrupted. So this is beyond now, should I apply Agile and Scrum to my team? This is a bigger conversation that's happening.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely. And so how can companies accelerate their business agility journey? How does that happen?
You know, we talk a lot about investing in measurement and continuous improvement as a way to accelerate it, and building internal change agents and coaches, and not only relying on external. So even when you hire external consultants, it should be for the purpose of enablement. Mm-hmm. Enablement, which is teaching you how to fish, and doubling down on talent development, because this isn't just about standing up teams. I mean, we've been standing up teams for years now, but it's about really helping elevate specific roles, whether it's the managers, the scrum masters, the product managers and product owners. Data acumen for business agility is going to be critical. So measurement, continuous improvement, talent development, building internal change agents. You got to learn how to fish and you got to do it faster. All of these communities of practice and centers of excellence have to start building enablement resources. So that's a big part of what we've put into Agility Health, is that when you measure and see where you are today, every area that you want to improve on, there are related learning resources, whether it's videos or recommendations or assets specifically around that area. And all, by the way, here's the mentors that can help you internally. Everything has to be directed and very relevant and data oriented, because we've been doing Agile for a while. We've been doing it for years. So now it's about doing it better. It's about optimizing and figuring out what are the 2 to 3 areas we want to improve on in the next quarter and doubling down on that. So those are just my recommendations for accelerating. No one's going to do this for you. You're going to have to learn how to do it at scale.
Love that. And talent development, huge. And I always like to say, I like to consult my way out of a job, right? I mean, I know I'm not there forever, and you've got to learn it. You've got to be able to do it on your own. So I love that.
We don't like walking away and seeing the whole thing fall apart as a consultant. Right. So that does not give anybody.
No.
You know,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. We've got to give them the tools and the skills and the knowledge to do it themselves. I agree. I agree totally. And so what are the 3 metrics that matter for an organization?
Wonderful question. So we say that at every level, whether it's team agility, team of team agility, org agility, or enterprise agility, we should be measuring maturity, which is the qualitative data. And that is the questions that you see in our big fancy radars. It's the crawl, walk, run, fly. Are we adopting the right practices and behaviors? Okay. I want to lose weight. Right? I want to slim down. There are practices and behaviors that I'm going to have to start adopting to get there. And there's crawl, walk, run, fly to the level of maturity that I can have. The next metric is performance data, and that's output oriented. And we're very much in love with that, Deborah, because all of our fancy tools have that kind of data for us. And so all of the managers and the leaders get like super focused on velocity, number of releases, quality, escape defects, yada, yada, yada. No problem. And I think that's really important. And so losing weight scenario, again, you know, the actual output data could be the weight, you know, is actually beginning to drop. I don't think that that should be the outcome. I think that being healthy and feeling good and, you know, my overall BMI, my overall health improving, that's the true outcome. But in order for me to get there, I'm starting to see, you know, some of my weight drop. So that's the third one, outcomes and OKRs. So if you combine qualitative maturity with performance, which is output data, with outcome data, which is what was the actual end result, what was the business value, you're really measuring the 3 metrics that matter. And today, companies are too focused on output metrics only, because that's what the tools have. And honestly, that's why we invented Agility Health, because we wanted to bring all 3 of them together. I couldn't convince leaders and executives to change when they're only looking at the output data. They're like, show me more of that, change that. And then the teams learned how to game it. And I'm like, I'm trying to explain to you that all that data can be gamified. It's this maturity and these practices that are leading indicators for the output. And your output data is a leading indicator for your outcomes. And that's the question you're not even asking about right now. So that's the power of looking at those three things together at the team level, at the team of team or product or train level, or at the portfolio or at the enterprise level.
I absolutely love it. I mean, my background is in quality assurance and performance and all of that. So it's just amazing to me what you've done with Agility Health. I love it. So how do you invest in measurement and growth at every level of an organization to achieve outcomes and stay competitive? How would I do that?
You know, measurement and growth is not a tool that you install. It's kind of like investing in Agile. When you wanted to invest in Agile and bring it, you really needed to train people. You needed to have buy-in. You needed to roll it out as a program. And so I always tell people, please don't come to Agility Health and think you're just installing a tool that's going to do stuff for you. It's a measurement and growth program. It's a hey, we're going to invest in listening to the voice of the teams, helping them grow and removing obstacles. So step number one is to come in with the intent, knowing that this is a program, not an installation of a tool. Number two, knowing that you cannot use that data to punish or reward anybody at all. So from the beginning, your intent is this data that I'm going to be collecting and this whole process is for measurement and for, it's not for performance management. No one's going to get fired or hired because of it. And no manager is going to get a bonus based on the results of this data, because the moment you do that, you'll never see the truth again. So once we agree to that, that's what you want to do, then we certify and train facilitators so that they know how to run these measure and grow workshops. We do a strategy session with the company and identify from a top down, what radar do they want to use? So for example, there's the enterprise business agility radar. They could be adopting scaled agile at scale and want to use a specific safe radar like the business agility one. There are some companies that are very much into digital transformation right now, and they might want to use that one at the portfolio. From the bottom up, we always recommend the team health radar. We recommend getting a baseline across all the teams. And then we really just run that. We run that baseline, we gather the data, we roll it up, and we do have the teams commit to action and growth. And they also identify one or two areas that they want the leaders. And the process is not done for me until we've rolled up the data and the managers have committed to action themselves. So in summary, that's basically it. Certify facilitators, invest in learning, make sure it's safe, psychological safety around this. Have a strategy and pick what do you want to measure, top down, bottom up. Run the measure and grow workshops, roll up the data, commit to growth.
That's fantastic. And what sort of challenges do you come across when doing that?
You know, at every step of the way, there's one challenge would be from the beginning that people don't understand what this is and they just think it's a survey. Oh, I just want to roll out a survey across everybody and just grab the data. Again, it's that, you know, measurement with no actions, worthless data. So coming in at it from that perspective immediately is a red sign for us. The second thing is wanting to use the data for judgment or punishment or reward. So that's another challenge. Most of those are solved by making sure that there's some upfront education for the leaders and the executives on what this is about. So that's handled there. Investing in, you know, certifying facilitators, it's not about the certification. It's really because data is powerful. And using it the right way and knowing how to facilitate a healthy conversation, letting people open up and be open and honest, it requires a skill. And by the way, not every Agile coach, by the way, is skilled at this. Some Agile coaches are very process-oriented, and they're going to look at the data and tell everybody what they should be doing differently. Well, that would be the wrong way to facilitate a retrospective. You want to let them come up with what they want to improve so that they have buy-in to it. And then teams, honestly, just making time. So a lot of leaders and teams will say, that's all great, but I don't have time. I have to execute on this. I have to get this done. So making time for measure and grow, organizations that have adopted SAFE already have the inspect and the adapt, the INA, which is about 4 hours. But organizations that have not adopted SAFE sometimes have not formally created an end of quarter or an end of release time where people pause to inspect and the adapt. So making time for this and making this a priority is also another challenge.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, The whole punish and reward problem is huge. And I see that so at so many different organizations where they use that kind of data for, you know, for bonuses or, you know, for to punish people. And it depends on the culture. And so I'm so glad that you bring that up. And that's probably part of your training for your facilitators. For sure. As well.
And for the leaders, even for the webinars that we do for the leaders and the executives from the beginning. I mean, honestly, we always tell people is if your intent is to use that data when Agility Health is not for you, go use a survey tool. But if you really are intending to do this for growth, so we, from the initial webinars that we do for leaders, we make sure that that message is loud and clear. And then obviously for the facilitators as well.
That's great. I love it. And then the time issue. Well, if you invest the time now, you'll save time on the back end, right?
Well, accelerate. I mean, I don't think they realize it. One of our customers, a large bank, said that after investing in this measure and grow for 6 months, they did it across 95 teams. The number of epics and features that they deliver in a month increased by 267%.
There you go.
And the 95 teams, the throughput, the amount of work that they were getting done was equal to 5 additional teams. So what I said, how much do 5 additional teams cost you? Because that's the ROI of you investing in Measure and Grow. These teams got faster. They got better. They had higher quality. The team said they were more aligned to outcomes because that was one of the problems that they tried to solve. They didn't understand the strategy of the why. So there's a lot of benefit to this. But again, if you're falling, tumbling down the stairway so fast that you can't pause to realize, probably should be walking down as opposed to just falling, you know?
I totally agree. And I love that. That mindset that you have is great. I mean, just those three things that you're thinking about ahead of time as you're going in is just amazing. So I want to thank you. Lauren, you have some questions for Sally?
Mm-hmm. Well, what Deborah does is she gives advice for a young woman, and I want to ask a few questions from a college perspective. So I always like to ask this question because I always think it's very interesting and intriguing to hear from, you know, especially you. You have a lot of experience in the world and whatnot. So what was there an experience you had early on in your career starting off in Agile that you wish you were told? Is there something that, not regret, sort of say, but something that you probably would take as a tool that would advance you further earlier on?
I stumbled into this, but don't put yourself in a box would be, you know, so I went through an MIS degree, Management Information Systems. So that was the degree that I got. And I loved MIS because I always knew that I love technology, but I like business as well. I'm like, yep. I got to get both of them. And I can tell that I've got leadership skills, managerial skills, even though at a young age, but I wanted to know enough about technology. So MIS was just perfect for me, right? That's what I needed, a little bit of both. But I stumbled into realizing I'm also a great trainer and a coach. And I'm actually really good with the business people. And I should never put myself in the box if I'm only a technologist. And I, for years, when I actually grew up, I even put myself in the technology world. I'm in the Java box. I'm not in the .NET. Like, it was really weird, but I religiously started to like advocate for Java and not .NET. And you can't do that as you're growing up. Like, you really just need to always be open and not be pro this or anti anything. Just learn. Like, have a growth mindset, learn and realize that your capabilities are unlimited. You know, I never would have known that 10 years or whatever, I would have had my own company. I would have been a business leader, a CEO, an activist. You know, I don't code anymore at all, even though that's what I went to school. And that's okay. Doesn't mean I've shifted away from my career. It means I've evolved. Right. So don't put yourself in the box and know that, you know, your skills and talented are very untapped and you're going to start discovering them as you test them in the market more and more.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. Right now, I'm going to school to get a major in MIS as well, accompanied with a minor in computer science. But I was the same way. I started off my freshman year being like, okay, I'm only going to do computer science. Like, that's my path. And then I got introduced, you know, the technology side to business. And I was like, well, that's where my, you know, loudmouth, my talkative self can perfectly fit into, because I love talking with consumers. So I think it's great not putting yourself in a box. And that's wonderful, you know, advice to give. And I appreciate that you, you know, reminded me of that. Don't put yourself in a box.
Don't put yourself in a box. I'll give you one more. And don't be intimidated when you're the only woman in the room, because, you know, growing up, I became a trainer for Java and SOA and IBM And they were very technical courses. And I chose them because they were so technical. And everybody else was afraid of them. Everybody was like, this is so new and this is so difficult. I chose to specialize in them and to train them. And I'm the only woman in the room, let alone the only Black woman in the room, right? But I didn't let that, like, I didn't for a second be conscious of that. And some people, honestly, as I walked in, I'm sure they were like, there's just no way she's going to be our trainer, you know? And I, like, you invested in my kit, you know, my hair, my makeup, everything. And I probably just didn't fit. I did not fit the mold of what I should be looking at as a very technical, very intelligent woman in technology. But I didn't for a second feel vulnerable or intimidated. I just came in with my smile and with my true authentic self and didn't tell myself stories of, I wonder if they're doubting me. I wonder if they're trying to question me. Don't wonder anything. Be yourself. Be confident, learn, invest in yourself, show up as you are, and people will open up the path for you. I've never been held back by being Black, being a woman, or being a Muslim. I've got all the things that could make me stand out and be different. Never even paid attention to it. People will say, you know, have you been held back? But I'm like, you know, if I did, I didn't pay attention to it. I never saw it because I don't look for it. You know, mm-hmm. you have, and there's a difference between confidence versus ego. I'm not saying ego, but I'm saying be confident, right. Be authentic. And that's what I really want to end with is, and I have a video out there, you know, my leadership has really been, style falls into those three words, which is be bold, be real, and lead with love. And I believe in those three things because they summarize my whole life story is being very bold, being very authentic and real, and having a big heart for everybody that I work with.
I'm like speechless because that is incredible. You know, points that you've made. And that's the whole reason why Deborah has started this. And I'm so fortunate to be a part of it. You know, this podcast is to make aware of, you know, women in agile or women in business or whatnot, wherever it may be, you know, to have the confidence and build that at a young age. And Deborah's helped me with that for sure. So, and people like you too, people that come on this show, that's what really is amazing. And that's what makes the difference in the world is, you know, you educating young women. So thank you very much. I do have one more question. So what advice would you give to someone that wants to build their skill in agile framework, but doesn't necessarily have the budget for classes or paid resources?
Go to agilevideos.com, which is our platform, put in the word transform30. And you'll get 30 days unlimited access to all the videos that are there. We have over 300 videos by role. It's all for free. You can watch it. I really want people to just invest in yourself. There's a lot of videos there. And even the full library, I think, is like $200 for the whole year for all the videos. And we really have collected the best of the best. My favorite is the Agile Simulation. The Agile Simulation course is a day in the life of an Agile team because we talk about it a lot, but we don't actually get to see a team. And I really believe in shadowing and watching and pairing. And so one of the courses is the Agile Simulation, and it's probably our most popular. But I would start with the Intro to Scrum, Intro to Kanban. We have one on roles and responsibilities. We have one on facilitation. There's a new one on business agility. That's for managers and leaders. There's a lot out there. So please start there and invest in learning.
Wow, that is amazing. Thank you, Sally, for that. I mean, there are, we know that we're learning from the best if we're learning from you. So thank you for that. I mean, I'm going to socialize
team.
That.
It's not just all me.
Yeah, I'm going to socialize that one. I mean, even though, you know, I'm a trainer and you know, I probably wouldn't want to send, you know, people to my competition, but that's just amazing. So you know, thank you. I was going to ask you about that.
I'm going to give you a promo code that's for your show because if people do sign up. I actually don't think Agile Videos replaces training. I want to clarify.
Right.
I think it supplements. I think people need to actually invest in training and getting certified, but I think they need on-demand learning as well.
I agree.
And on-demand learning is where Agile Videos fits.
Yep, I agree. And it's great for them to just go in there and get a little bite of, oh, I just need to learn a little bit about Scrum, or, you know, I don't know anything about Kanban, so let me go watch a video there. And I know that it'll be high quality, so that's fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you for what you've said to Lauren. I mean, it's so true. It's just, you know, be who you are, have the confidence that you know what you're doing, and it doesn't matter if you're a woman, right? It doesn't matter, so... that's one of the things that we want to start, you know, socializing here on the show and in our mentoring program. So thank you so much, Sally, for joining us. We're gonna wrap up. I think that's a good place to stop. And Lauren, I know you usually ask, but Sally, how can we get in touch with you or get into Agility Health? If I'm a company and I want to get into Agility Health, how do we do that?
You can email Sally at agilityhealthradar.com, or you can email info@agilityhealthradar. That comes to a broader team. I'm included there. And for agile videos, same, just honestly, agilityhealthradar.com, or email me directly and we're happy to help.
Right. And we'll have all those links in our show notes as well. And just a reminder to our listeners that although this show is live, we do record them and release them as a podcast. So please subscribe to the Learnist Show, LURNIST show, on Apple iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your platform of choice. You can find the links to the show on our website, thelearnist.com. That's the LURNIST.com. And then, of course, thank you to Learn Agile, our sponsor. So that's it for now. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on January 26th with Diana Larson of the Agile Fluency Project and Padmini Nijumolu of Lean and Agile at 11 a.m. Arizona time. I think it's still Mountain Standard Time. Until then, we wish everyone a wonderful holiday season, and we will see you in the new year. And thank you so much, Sally. We really appreciate everything you shared with us today. Bye.